Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm James Shakeshaft.
And I, on the other hand, am Alistair Beckett King.
Ooh.
I mixed it up.
You did. Alistair, we're going back to Oxford today.
Okay.
And I've got to warn you, I pushed the podcast medium about as far as it can go.
I think this episode actually has a really good story that you have mangled.
I've done my utmost to hide that. So enjoy the episode, everyone. It's the tale of Mary Blandy. Should we just go straight into it?
Let's just plow into it.
Okay.
Let's treat it like the snow that fell the other day and just leap into it with joy and excitement.
Then it'll be washed away.
Yeah, within minutes.
Within minutes. Well, actually, I hope you're ready for this one because I watched Tenet the other day.
The what's-his-name film?
The Christopher Nolan film, yes.
The Christopher Nolan film.
And then, obviously, lots of videos on YouTube explaining Tenet. And I've got some real ideas about how to tell stories in a non-linear manner.
Oh, no. Oh, you're going to Nolan it. I hate those YouTube explainer videos because there's two things that have destroyed narrative. One of them is the plot hole video. And it's all things like, oh, we see him getting in the taxi, but we never see him getting out of the taxi. Yeah, you're a fool. Yeah. He just got out of the taxi in a scene that wasn't in the film.
Yeah.
That's not a plot hole.
Yeah.
A good film isn't an exhaustive documentary of every single thing that happened within the story, you fools.
You want to watch that Andy Warhol one about the Empire State Building. Building, if you want. Yeah,
that's what you want. And the other thing that I hate are these, because it's always things like the ending of Pride and Prejudice explained. The ending, they got married. That's it. Why do people watch this?
Well, with films like Tenet, I'd like to know, but then I watch it and like, you don't know. I misunderstood that at the time.
To be fair, I haven't seen Tenet, so I don't know if it is overblown, pretentious and dreadful.
It's very, very confusing. You know Inception?
I do remember Inception.
Did you go see Inception?
Yeah.
And did you think, not that confusing?
Yes, I did.
Right. So, me too, but then watching Tenet, I think, now I must be like what the other people were like when they watched Inception, because I haven't got a clue.
The problem with Inception for me is that it's a film that gives the impression of being clever without being particularly clever.
Yeah, it was like, you can understand what's going on if you just listen to the bits when the people explain the plot.
Yeah.
But what they've done in Tenet is they've made the sound really muffly and everyone talks really fast.
So they just talk too fast for you to hear what they're saying?
Yeah. It's like that bit in Partridge where him and Lynn talk in front of his girlfriend. He says, like, if we speak fast, she won't understand. So anyway, prepare yourself for a challenging...
I am girding my loins. Yep. Is that what you should do in this situation?
Not when you're allowed to go in a cinema.
It's just wrapping something around, isn't it? That's what girding is.
Oh, is that all the way round with the bum as well, or are you girding your individual loin?
I'm including the bum, obviously.
Okay, good.
Be reasonable.
Let's not go into that.
I'm girding my loins, aka wearing trousers. That's what I'm doing.
You popped your trousers on. Good lad.
Yeah.
Right.
Now lay it on me.
You ready? We start. It's Oxford Castle in Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
It was built in 1071 by one of William the Conqueror's barons, Robert de Oily.
I like this guy. Do you think the 1070s were the same as the 1970s? And he was all slick back, sideburns, flares, a really wide collared shirt. Baron d'Oily. Or is it Baron d'Oily, like on your grand's table?
It's either French for Baron the Oily or Baron d'Oily. Either very greasy or very twee.
Does he protect surfaces or is he himself a threat to them because of the oil?
We'll never know.
We don't know.
So he builds the Motte on Bailey Castle. You can still see the castle mound. It's next to the Westgate in Oxford if you find yourself there.
I've seen it. Yeah, it's a little sort of spirally mound with no castle, if I remember.
Yeah.
What happened to the castle?
Well, it would have been made of wood.
You have embarrassed yourself, Baron Doily. Classic mistake.
You should have oiled that wood or put a doily on it to protect it from the elements.
Did he start out with a straw castle?
Yeah, he was on the way to building a good castle. Fun fact, I hadn't really realised this before, but in this book it pointed it out. A Mott and Bailey, so when they dug out to make a moat, they used that earth to make the hill.
Oh, right. That makes a lot of sense.
Very efficient.
It's one of those things that as soon as it's explained to you, you think, yes, that was my idea. It's so obvious that I feel like I already knew that.
Yeah, I didn't, but I was like, ah, very clever. Staring you in the face the whole time.
So you've got like an environmentally friendly, recycled Mott.
Yeah, a carbon neutral wooden castle. Actually, it's probably not that carbon neutral, is it?
Not after it burned down, probably.
So, smash cut to 900 years in the future. We're still on the castle mound, but there's no castle there now.
This is 900 years in the future of 1070?
Yes.
Right.
900 and a bit. We're probably around the year 2000. I'm not 100% sure what year.
Okay.
There's a ghost tour guide, Nuala Young, and she's given a ghost tour around the castle, and she's describing the white figure of a woman with a handkerchief over her face who walks across the castle mound protesting her innocence. Doesn't specify how the handkerchief was attached, but we're just going to have to go with it.
Presumably the handkerchief was levitating because it itself was the ghost of a
handkerchief,
living handkerchief. Yes. So you've got two hauntings occurring simultaneously there.
Mm. And the tour group look up the hill and that is what they see. They see a white figure with a white handkerchief over her face walking over the hill.
Yeah.
And Nuala can't convince them that that wasn't a setup.
Really?
But they've all just witnessed that ghost.
How many witnesses are we talking about?
I don't know. Doesn't specify.
Several.
A small tour group.
A small tour group of that most incorruptible type of person.
People who've bought the ticket for a ghost tour.
Yes. Yes, the most sceptical and scientifically minded people on earth. Tourists on a ghost tour.
We're going to jump back 250 years.
We're going back in time now.
To 1752, and we're still on the castle mound, and the hanging is about to take place. It's a makeshift gallows, it's a pole between two trees, and a woman with a white handkerchief over her face is climbing the ladder. Again, it doesn't specify how that handkerchief is attached to her face.
Mm.
And as she's going up the ladder, she says, "Gentlemen, do not hang me high for the sake of decency." Mm. She doesn't want people to look up her dress while she's being hanged.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
And now we're going to jump 217 years into the future.
Okay.
To 1969.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that same scene again, but it's on stage in Henley-on-Thames at the Kenton Theatre. We're in the midst of rehearsals for Jean Morgan's play, The Hanging Wood. And as she...
That's a great name.
She's got the white handkerchief on her face. Now, they've definitely worked out how to attach it to her face. This is a play.
Yeah. They've got advanced makeup techniques.
A big rubber band.
Yeah, they've got stage hands holding it in place.
And the woman says the line, "Don't hang me high for the sake of decency," and then says, "Sorry, this is a close rehearsal. Can you get that girl out of here, please?"
Oh.
And everyone looks to the back of the auditorium, and there's a figure of a girl there. And someone goes to get her out, and she vanishes. She's gone.
Wow. Witnessed by that most sceptical of people, actors.
Mm.
Wow.
And Jo Morgan, the playwright, she was there and she says that when a few years previously she'd seen a reenactment of the court case of the woman who was hanged at Henley Town Hall and a similar unexplained figure was there. I don't know if we'd show that in the film. We might just have it as reported.
That's a deleted scene.
We're showing a lot at the minute. Mm. We've now got a montage of mirrors falling off sets, doors opening by themselves, and lights going on and off.
Oh, yeah?
And cast members sat around a table drinking tea, talking about this Mary Blandy. And someone says, "Do you think she really poisoned him?" And a cup lifts off the table and smashes on the floor.
Wow. Where did this happen?
That was during the theatre rehearsals for the play The Hanging Wood in 1969.
During the theatre rehearsal. So again, witnessed by actors.
Mm.
That's pretty authoritative.
But as we look at the shattered cup on the floor, we cut back to 1751 and a different cup is being smashed on the floor.
Are you trying to do a match cut in podcast form?
Yes.
This is one of the most formally ambitious podcasts I've ever been part of.
Yeah.
Thank you, James.
Yeah.
Wow.
So another cup smashes on the floor and an old man spluttering and coughing. And there's a maid fussing around cleaning it up. And another maid rushes in and the first maid says, "He said it tasted gritty." And the second maid gives a bit of a look.
like sort of Jim from The Office to the camera, or
yeah, maybe not so comedic.
What kind of a look?
Like, oh, that's not a surprise, but it's not good.
Mm.
And now we go back to 1746, and that old man's in better health.
Oh, good.
Well, no, we've gone back in time 5 years.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah.
It's very challenging. Temporally.
What is the YouTube video explaining this episode?
There will be a YouTube video to explain this episode, don't worry.
So, back in time, before the poisoning, he seems fine.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
He's Francis Blandy. He's the town clerk of Henley.
He's got one of those lovely names, which is pretty much a sentence. Like, Francis Bland. Tom Waits.
Patty Smith. Is that a job title? Is that a fancy way of saying burger flipper? Yeah, he's there with... So, Francis Blandy is there with his wife and his daughter, Mary Blandy. And they're going to dinner at Paradise House.
You can't drop the name Paradise House in and then just scoot off.
It's a good name. It's just...
That's lovely. Where and what is Paradise House?
I don't know
House?
Where it is. But it's the home of General Mark Kerr.
Oh.
And they're going to dinner there. And that's where Mary Blandy, who... She's of marrying age. She's about 25 now, I think.
In those days, you're basically retired.
Yeah, she's not married.
That's quite late to be married, isn't it, for a woman of that class?
She's not even married yet.
Mm.
Despite the fact that Francis Blandy keeps banging on about how big her dowry is.
Yeah.
Like 10 grand or something. They're very pernickety, the parents, about potential suitors for Mary Blandy.
It sounds like they might be being a bit too fussy.
Yeah. Especially, now, apparently, she's not that good looking. I don't want to be sort of, like, facist, but she's described as having a rather ordinary face that's not improved by the results of smallpox.
Right.
Not sure why they mention that, but they do even it out later by slagging off a man's looks.
All right, fair enough. As long as it is a crucial part of most folktales that the young heroine is exceptionally beautiful. So it's nice to know that...
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. She's not going to get into a folktale. She's going to be hanged. I've just realised what's going to happen. Yep. Sorry, ugly people. It's the noose for you.
Yeah, she doesn't get away with it. She doesn't bat her eyelids and get away with it.
The world of fairy tales is siphoning beautiful people into fairy mounds and wizards' caves.
Mm.
Ugmos, up on the gallows. Dance the hempen jig on the old three-legged mare. Speaking as an odd-looking person, I'm very offended.
Well,
I have the kind of looks where people often say, you should do, like, modelling, but not fashion modelling, but, you know, like... being in the background of documentaries and stuff.
Documentaries about what?
Yeah, the olden days. Just standing by a well. So, I was poisoned. You know, that sort of thing.
Storm's coming.
Yeah, exactly. So, she was one of us.
Yes. They go to dinner at General Mark Kerr's house, and one of the other guests is a Scotsman called Captain William Henry Cranston, who was visiting Henley because of army stuff. I don't know. Now, he's described as being short and ordinary looking, with sandy hair, small, weak eyes, freckled and pitted skin, and, quote marks, clumsy legs.
He's a captain. How do you rise to the rank of captain with clumsy legs and tiny eyes?
I don't know. There was some sort of charm about him, as Mary would find out.
He must have had some kind of charisma, some kind of leadership ability.
He apparently had a roving eye, but I think that's more figurative than a physical description.
Not that it kept popping out and landing in the sugar bowl.
He was also considered to be highly eligible. This is probably how he got to the role of captain. He's the fifth son of a Scottish peer, Lord Cranston.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah, that Mary falls in love with this odd little weirdo. She wants to get married to him.
Why not? A couple of oddballs, a couple of revolting goblins. Stick them together.
It's good that they found each other. And her mum's up for it. Mum thinks, yep, good idea.
Mm-hmm.
The dad, he's not so sure. And this has been the problem.
Right.
All of Mary's life. The dad, he's not letting her live her life.
Come on, dad.
But he starts to warm to him until a letter arrives. I'm not sure who it's from. It might even be an anonymous letter. But it says... that Captain Cranston has already got a wife.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes.
So this guy's got two women after him, at least, that we know about.
Minimum two.
Minimum two, with his legs.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So the father's furious, and he's like, this is not going to happen. And around the same time, the mother dies as well, and so there's no one on Mary's side. Cranston keeps saying that he's going to break it off with his wife up back in Scotland, but it never seems to happen. And then what he says is, to Mary... He says, we need to get your dad back on side with me. Tell you what I'll do. I'm going to go speak to a little witch lady I know up in Scotland. I'm going to get you this magic love potion.
What?
You pop it in your dad's drink and he's going to come around.
What? This is the most ridiculous plan I've ever heard. Divorce your current wife. That's the sticking point.
No. Magic potion on the dad.
Don't try and make your future father-in-law fall in love with you. That's madness. This is a throwing popcorn at the screen moment. What are you doing?
And the Mary Blandy thinks, oh, I remember that time that dad was a bit upset and Cranston popped something in his tea and he was much happier afterwards. So maybe he's onto something.
I'm starting to suspect that there's a Bryan Cranston kind of connection here and that he might be used in drugs in some way. Perhaps his witch is no witch at all.
No, she's just a dealer. She receives a paper with some powder in it. Some, you could say, dust.
Experience our Patreon subscribers will be alarmingly familiar with because of your insistence on sending them small packets of mystery powders.
It's just a love potion.
So it's love potion.
It's a love potion.
Don't eat the love potion.
Don't eat the dust.
Don't eat the mystery powder. That doesn't just apply to this podcast.
No, in general.
Don't eat mystery powder sent to you by any podcast.
And so she starts slipping this in and the cooks and the maids, they sort of suspect something up because one day one of the maids has tea from Francis Blandy's teapot after he's left it and she's very ill afterwards. And another time a cat licks out of his porridge bowl and is also very sick. And the maids, they start to get a bit suspicious and they tell the vicar that they think something's going on.
So the maids are on the case. The maids are not just standing by.
Not idly by, no. They go straight...
The maids are like, this is serious. Call in the vicar.
3 years later, they go straight to see the vicar. No, I'm not sure if it was 3 years, but it was. Yeah, they get the
like
vicar.
Dog out of the gates. Vicar. Did I ever tell you about my sitcom idea called I'll Get the Vicar?
No.
That's the main premise. It's like a very light-hearted 1970 sitcom. Very low on jokes. Mm. Very, very low joke count. Mm. It's mostly mix-ups about sandwiches.
And poisoning?
There's no poisoning, no. But usually it ends with someone saying, I'll get the vicar. Until the last episode, the vicar has passed on. You know, this is a British sitcom, so this is easily run for 8-9 episodes by this point. Mm. We're invested in the characters. Mm. And the last episode, it's the wake. And someone says, I'll get the...
Oh, and I bet there's no theme music at the end of credits either.
No theme music. Nope, straight to the quiet credits, and you are crying. You are in
weeping.
Pieces. You're weeping. Oof. Classic TV moments from the past.
I thought you were going a different way. I thought it was going to be that you never see the vicar. You just hear, I'll get the vicar. And in the final episode, you finally see the vicar. And you
finally meet the vicar.
He's like this giant smoking demon vicar that comes in and just like... turns people into pillars of salt and stuff.
The number of TV shows, especially American TV shows, which end by just saying, by the way, everything that happened before, complete nonsense. Like, the characters learn they're on a TV show and have to fight their way out. Like, the number of shows that end like that is incredible.
It's like every GCSE self-devised drama piece. Let's just do a bit about writing a GCSE self-devised drama piece and how it's quite difficult. Anyway, where were we? The vicar mentions this to Francis Blandy, and he's like, well, do feel a bit funny sometimes. Thanks for the tea, Mary. That's very nice of you. Drinks the tea, drops it, cough splutters. Maid comes in. Maid says to the other maid, he said it was a bit gritty.
Mm.
We've seen that scene from earlier again in a different context.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so he dies. Francis Blandy dies.
Right,
and
from the grit.
Mary Blandy realises what's happened. The maid, she scrapes the porridge bowl at the bottom. There's a gritty substance. And Mary Blandy, she says, oh, chuck that away. And she throws the paper with the last little bit of poison it onto the fire. The maid says, oh, just pop some more coal on that, Mary. Don't worry. Pops the coal on, manages to retrieve the paper very subtly. And they lock it up in the cupboard. They get a local expert, Dr. Anthony Addington, who's a local expert on arsenic, and he presents in the court case about the effects of arsenic and actually makes his name.
Anthony Addington, arsenic.
He's a AAA witness.
Slightly smaller than a AA witness.
A lot thinner, slender. Hmm. But you can't really tell until you've got it in your hand. And she's found guilty. Cranston's never brought to justice.
No?
By the way, he escapes to the continent and takes another name. But Blandy, it's never quite ascertained whether she knew what she was doing or she was the innocent victim.
Right, whether she actually thought it was a love potion.
But she is found guilty. So in the court of law, it's said that she knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
And she did it on purpose. And she is hanged, and her ghost to this day seen on hills and theatres and town halls in a small area of the country.
Wherever credulous and excessively imaginative people
will meet and talk.
Wherever that happens.
They may
there you will see her.
The ghost. But, interesting postscript. Whilst Cranston isn't brought to formal justice, on the 2nd of December 1752, a few months after Blandy was hanged, Cranston falls ill.
Oh yeah?
He starts swelling and swelling till it looks like he's going to burst, and then he dies. And it's never ascertained what the cause was of this mystery.
He just swells up until he's about to explode and then dies.
And dies.
And nobody knows what that was.
Yeah, no. Could be that he was
haunted from inside.
Or haunted from inside, yeah. I was thinking
like a ghost manifested inside himself, inside him.
I was thinking ghost poisoned.
Ghost poisoning, yeah, that's an option. Good. I didn't like him. Horrible little sandy-haired man.
Weak eyes. Don't know what that means, but they're weak.
He's one of those characters who, if he was in a cartoon, most characters would have a white and then a dot. But he'd be one of those ones with just a dot.
Yes.
Tiny little bing, 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 blinking eyes.
Mm. And that's the end.
What a tale. What a needlessly complicated way of telling a story.
Yes, thank you.
For jumping backwards and forwards through time.
As I say, I've just watched Tenet.
Masterful.
So that's my pitch.
Oh, that's the pitch. So if anybody would like to fund the production of this movie.
If anyone's got the ear of Christopher Nolan, you know.
The ear of Christopher Nolan is like what a witch would use in a recipe for a pretentious cinema potion. I don't know. What a tale.
You ready to score me? Because I'm ready to be scored.
Yes.
I'm expecting at least an Oscar nod.
Forming my best Mark Kermode quiff.
Oh, that would be high.
Yeah, if you were to quiff my hair, yes.
Too high.
You would be dealing with a surfboard length. Or one of those body boards.
Mm. You know. A boogie board.
what voice is that you say boogie boarding?
A boogie board.
A boogie board. Is that David Bowie saying?
It's sort of David Bowie, yeah.
A boogie board.
A boogie board.
I'd like to purchase a boogie board.
I'm going down to Perranporth. I'm going to take a boogie board.
I realise also I was doing Harry H. Corbett. Not...
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't afford to spend that much money on a boogie board.
You dirty old juke.
I'm a rag and bone man. I can't afford that. Ridiculous.
Don't worry about it, Harry. I'll get you one. I'll buy you two boogie boards and a skateboard for the old guy.
So
that was a terrible Bowie.
I mean, my Harry H. Corbett was pretty bad.
So, scores. Let's do naming first.
Names. I like them all. I like the Oily Baron.
Oily Bob.
Yes. Slippery Joe. I like Triple A.
Billy the Conk.
Who was Billy the Conk?
William the Conqueror.
Oh, William. Brilliant. Yes, I like that.
Cool new name for him.
What was my surprise there? Willie Conks. Absolutely. He's good.
We've got the Blands family, the Blandy family.
The Blandy family. Francis Blandy. That's
France
great.
Is Blandy. Apart from the Pyrenees, which are quite striking.
It's not true. I mean, it's very unfair for me to suggest that France is bland when I live in England. We invented bland.
Some of it is a bit Brittany.
That's true. I've just looked up Blandy. Apparently, according to houseofnames.com, it means having blonde hair, coming from the Anglo-Norman French word blunt.
Like blonde?
Which means blonde.
Ah.
Yeah. Mm. But the surname Bland, according to the internet, apparently comes from the Old English word gabland, meaning storm or commotion.
Gabland?
It certainly was. Gabland.
Gabland!
I have no idea.
From the Old English comic book word to describe storms.
Oh, yeah. For when you punch a clown in the face.
Joan Morgan. That's a name. She was the playwright. The Hanging Wood.
Good title. Great title. I like it.
Yeah, because it's gallows are made of wood.
Oh, right. So the Hanging Wood. The Hanging Wood, yeah.
Mm.
Sorry, I bit my own teeth there. I don't know if that will come out in the podcast. Have you ever done that?
You bite your own teeth?
Just sometimes it happens. I bite my own teeth.
Oh, like when you catch the top ones on the bottom ones and it slightly jars.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell how much noise it made because it jarred my whole head.
But names.
Yeah, The Hanging Wood, great. Great name.
Those are all the names I've got.
That's all the names. What's the title of the story? It's probably one of those films where it doesn't put the title at the start.
Mm.
Hard cut to black. None of your fade to black. Hard cut to black. Poof. Then the title comes in. A film by James Shakeshaft. So what is that title? This is your chance to get one more point, and that point means everything at this stage.
Oh, I think I'll go with what Rob Walters went with in Haunted Oxford.
Poof.
Hang Me Low.
Nice. 5 out of 5.
Yes. Thanks, Rob.
For an original idea by Rob.
Right, then. Supernatural.
Supernatural. Well. That's a very long and confident laugh.
Yeah, that was my Jabba the Hutt.
So you reckon you're scoring highly in this category?
Yeah.
Because of multiple ghost appearances.
Yeah.
I suppose ghosts are technically supernatural.
I think so.
So how many sightings have we got in total? We've got the ghost walk folk.
Yes.
We've got the appearance during the rehearsal.
Yes.
Oh, we've got the lifting up of the cup during rehearsal.
Yes.
And the smashing it onto the ground. That's great.
And the reenactment of the court case.
Yeah.
At Henley Town Hall, which is brushed aside in every version of this story. They sort of brush aside like that's normal.
Mm.
That they reenacted a court case in a town hall.
What?
For the shiggles.
I'd assume that the court case happened in the town hall. So you're telling me that it...
No, it happened in Oxford. They just did a reenactment in Henley a couple hundred years later.
Wow.
Because the playwright saw it, who wrote it in 1969.
Oh, right,
but
yeah.
It happened in 1752.
That's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No one really goes on about that.
The only thing I can think of is when Jeremy Archer did that play about his own trial, where the audience at the end got to vote about whether he was guilty or not. Which is like, yeah, but the thing is, you had a trial and were found guilty. So
this is a show trial, quite literally by definition.
Yeah, it doesn't really undermine the first trial, does it?
Was the judge played by a kangaroo?
I think it is. It's 5 out of 5. I'm sorry. Yeah, I want to make it 4, but the cup smashing's too great.
Whoa.
The cup that rises up into the air and then smashes to the ground.
Yeah,
it's 5.
Yes.
Oh, hate to part with them. Hate to part with 3 points like that.
I knew this was bulletproof.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. I'm distributing them freely.
Next up, scot-free. That's
Yeah, very good. Because the Scottish man got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else to that pun than that?
No, but it's blooming worth it, isn't it?
It's a very good pun. I'm giving you 3 out of 5 because you are spreading that pun quite thinly in terms of score category.
Whoa.
That is one blob of a very nice pun spread on quite a lot of toast.
But that pun just swells up and swells up mysteriously until it looks like it's going to burst.
Oh, so, yeah, but the fact that he did receive some kind of rough justice undermines the idea of him getting off scot-free.
Mm.
So that's why I'm limiting it to 3.
Okay, then.
You've been treated very generously so far.
Fair enough.
And if you're not happy with this, you can always stage a version of this in 200 years' time.
Yeah. Or just hang around theatres until they put a play on of it. The play of the podcast of the film pitch. Now a West End musical.
I'd love to be the first podcast to become a musical. It'd just be called Lawmen, but with an exclamation mark.
Definitely.
So what's your final category?
Gritty.
Gritty.
Gritty, because it's a gritty, realistic take on the handkerchief lady.
Oh, yeah, it was like a Ken Loach film, wasn't it?
Wasn't it? With all the flashbacks and stuff and the ghosts.
And ghosts. Mm. Yeah, it wasn't a lot like a Ken Loach film.
There wasn't even a kitchen sink.
Well, no, they have to have washed the grit out into something, so...
Oh, that's true. There might have been a kitchen sink.
There would have been a basin of some kind, at least. Mm. So there was grit. There was the
grit.
Love potion, the quote-unquote love potion. It has a gritty residue.
I imagine that the play was probably quite, you know, Stanislavski and
yeah,
you know, brooding and
realist drama.
The one that was on in the local theatre. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. There is some grit.
And mostly there's the actual grit.
And there's actual grit. Yep. So you've got some grit.
The dust.
However, you told the story in such a stylish way. I would say it was actually quite slick.
Damn it.
I think you're undermining the grit by your unnecessarily ostentatious presentation. Now, I'm speaking to you as much as to Christopher Nolan here. So I think there's a lesson there.
I should have gone with the category doily.
Well, even Oily Bob, he's oily. He's not gritty, is he?
No,
although
he's
I imagine
slick.
Some grit would adhere to
the
oil.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He doesn't change it regularly, his hair oil.
This Brill-creamed, lacquered French gentleman. he's slippery. It's like, shaking his hand, be like trying to grab a pig. It's one of the slippery ones.
Grab a hot pig.
Just slithering around Oxfordshire like an eel. Like a French eel. El bonjour. Horrible. Revolting.
Or French eel.
Like the alien from Alien, just slipping in and out of vents.
Mm. Au revoir.
I've forgotten what we were talking about. I've just started describing
just
how revolting I find the idea of this oily French man. Yeah, he's completely, his body's completely, it's ductile. You know, if you pull on one of his fingers, he's like Eugene Toombs. It just stretches.
Oh.
He's grotesque. He's monstrous.
Or Stretch Armstrong.
Or Stretch Armstrong.
For similar age listeners. Okay.
So in conclusion, grit, it is a 1 out of 5 for grit. But around that single bit of grit, the pearl of a three has formed. How about that?
Whoa.
Be happy with
that. Wow. As with actual pearls, I've got no idea how that works.
It's simply nature, James. Lovely story.
Thanks.
Can I ungird my loins now?
Yeah. Let them breathe. Let them breathe.
Oh, that's better. You've been listening to Lawmen with me, Alistair Beckett-King.
And on the other hand, me, James Shakeshaft.
Very nice.
Mm.
And the Lawmen are taking part in the Leicester Comedy Festival. So you can watch our online show on Saturday the 20th of February.
2021.
Google Leicester Comedy Festival, Lawmen.
You know how to spell it.
You know how to spell it. And you have to pay £5.
Leicester is named after King Lear.
That's an example of some of the Leicester facts James is going to be dropping. They got that one for free, James.
I'm going to be researching more.
So join us for Lawmen Live and or get on the old Patreon if you want.
Oh, yeah.
Patreon.com/LawmenPod.
I used to think my mum did the dubs when I was a kid, because I knew my mum didn't like swearing, but I knew they swore in films, and they'd often replace the S word with dear. So you'd have people go, oh, dear.
Clay Davis from The Wire. Dear.
So whenever I saw a film that had been clearly cut or dubbed for a swear...
You thought that's mum?
I thought mum's been at the old technology and then...
It's a beautiful illustration of the power that we think our parents have.
Yeah, doing a very good impression of Michael Douglas in Romancing the Stone.
There's a lot of swearing.
Yeah, but I saw a version which had it all cut, and that is the film that made me think my mum was a lot better at technology than she is. If you knew how she did a screen grab these days, you would not believe that she had the ability to...
She's a take a photograph of the screen person, isn't she?
Yeah. She obviously doesn't listen to this podcast, so I can say what I want.
She's the one who bleeps this podcast.
And it's not like a noise, it's just her tutting, isn't it?
Yeah, that noise is just the sound of her Marge Simpson-like disapproval.